The John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
You found it. You're here. You're headlong down the runaway train that is the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. Thanks for being with us today on the post July 4th edition. Monday, July 5th, 2021. We got Masako Ganaha as our guest today, all the way from Japan. Really excited about that. Before we get into that, check out AnomicAge.com. Share the links, friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. Please share the links, like all the likes, subscribe to all the subscriptions. And the best part, if you are so inclined, I could really use the help. PayPal.me/AnomicAge, Patreon.com/AnomicAge as well. This thing's free for you, but certainly not free for me, and I would love an equipment upgrade or at the very least to pay the bills around here. So I encourage everyone to do that. Become a sponsor, become a patron, just one-time donation, whatever you choose. If you like the content, recognize that these are amazing guests, and this content is not free for me. Nevertheless, let's get into it. Stick around for our guest. She'll be with us in just a mere matter of seconds. Stick around. It's my pleasure to welcome Masako Ganaha into the Anomic Age today. She's a Japanese foreign correspondent from Okinawa. Ms. Ganaha is well known for her research in Japan, Taiwan, and the United States on Chinese Communist Party information warfare and so much more. I'm so happy to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, definitely. The pleasure's all mine. I'm happy you stayed up late for us over there where you're at. So.
Yes, it's 2 a.m.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it. Definitely the first time I've had someone where you're at to talk, and more specifically to talk about everything that you've researched. You're so well-traveled and know so much about so much. So I suppose let's just get into what you've been doing. I know you just got back from Europe and Armenia, but you've also been in Colombia at the Darien Gap in Panama and so much more. So where's your research taken you so far, or thus far, I should say?
Okay, so right now I'm in Tokyo, Japan, and I'm under 2 weeks quarantine because Japanese government requires everybody who enters Japan to self-quarantine 2 weeks. So I'm not allowed to take any domestic transportation, so I cannot go back to my place where I live, which is in Okinawa. It's a very small island located southern part of Japan. And so I just came back from Panama. And actually, I went to United States last year to cover election. And then after election, I was very interested about migrant issue. So I decided to go to the border, Texas. I went to Texas. And then I went to Mexico a couple of times, just for a one-day trip at a time. And then I met a war correspondent, Chuck Holton. He was on your show on the other day. And I was accompanying another war correspondent, Michael Young, who was you interviewed also. Mm-hmm. And I went to Panama with them because Chuck lives in Panama and he has been covering migrant issue for many years. So we went to Colombia and then went to Panama. And we went to many places where migrants try to illegally go through all the places like jungles or cross into rivers many other places. And then I went to Armenia, and then I came back to Panama. Actually, this time my purpose was to join two American congressmen's private journey to Darien Gap. So I was very honored to be a part of that trip.
Well, that's one thing. It's kind of ironic because in the American press, none of this gets coverage. I didn't even know anything about the Darien Gap until I started talking to Michael and Chuck in the past few months. And I mean, like you mentioned, the U.S. congressman coming there, that's something we don't even get any press of as well. So talk about that a little bit. What was that like? And what were they doing? I mean, were they just sort of like, oh, this is nice, moving on? Or were they actually trying to figure out a way to stop this and to make this migration passage safer? Or what were they going to do?
It was not official. So they used their own private vacation to see what's really happening in the southern part of Central America. Because they've been hearing so many things, and they said that they wanted to know what is really going on, because like you said, media don't tell Americans the truth. By the way, the media issue is happening, same thing happening in Japan. One of the reasons that I started what I do now is because mainstream media do not tell Japanese people the truth. So we have same problem. And we went to Darien Gap. Darien Gap is the place between Colombia and Panama. This is kind of like the place migrants have to go through on their way to United States. So many migrants, not only from South America, but also many other continental, they go to whichever country they can go with their passport. And then from there, they have to go maybe taking bus or walking or whatever they can do to get to the United States. And we went to Darien Gap, and we saw many migrants who were just they've been doing this. They started the journey without knowing what's ahead. And we saw many migrants who lost their families, or babies who lost their parents, left alone in the jungle, and somebody who found them, or somebody who was traveling with them in the group, they decided to carry the baby instead of their parents. It's just a misery happening, and I could not believe that those kind of things is really happening, and mainstream media do not want Americans to know about this. And they give you an idea that illegal migrant issue is just a human rights issue. They just tell you to feel sorry for them. And they're not, mainstream media do not tell you to look at those issues on the aspect that we need to know. So we went to the village called Bajo Chiquito. In Bajo Chiquito, indigenous people live there. The indigenous people's name is Embera, and they are very nice, but they are overwhelmed because in Bajo Chiquito, only 500 people live there, and every day about 300 migrants come, like every day, constantly, and many people need food. They come out with injured, like trench foot, or they just confused, hurt, needs medical care. But there are only one or two doctors. So it's just the migrant issue is not just about human rights. It's about, it's kind of like a business. And those people who make living by helping migrants or like smugglers or the criminals who are associated with cocaine, they also use migrants as coverage to do what they do. So there are so many issues along with those migrant issues. And it was very sad and shocking to know the truth. Yes, wow. I'm kind of confused. I don't know which part to start.
No, I mean, you're doing just fine. You're doing a great job. And I'd recommend everybody checking out your videos. That's what I was doing last night on YouTube. And it's also on Locals. You can just search for Masako Ghana. And I'll have all those links like under your name while we're talking, as well as I'll have them in your information section. But again, I would encourage everybody to take a look at those videos, because I guarantee you, you're not seeing this stuff in mainstream media. And it's startling, and it's stark, and just the death. I mean, I can't even imagine. You've been there firsthand, but I mean, you're seeing people suffering. I mean, the human suffering that's going on, the death and the exploitation of people. And I never even looked at it through this perspective, but since you mentioned it, I mean, the indigenous people that are there, that's sort of an untold hardship that nobody's even talked about. But there are indigenous people that live there, and they're having to face sort of these same problems where they've got influx of thousands of people, or who knows the number, because there's not really a tally here, but there's thousands of people conservatively going through this gap regularly. So that's got to have a toll on the indigenous people as well. I mean, I can't even fathom some of the stuff you've seen out there.
Yes. So maybe I should tell you what I see first, in order to for easier understanding. So we took boat to get to the Baho Chiquito. It's not an easy way to go there. We had great chance that our boat flips in the river, in which many crocodiles live. Mm-hmm. And it was about 1.5 hour trip, one way, to get to the village. And so we are on the boat. We are on two boats. And on the way, we crossed 16 boats full of migrants. We are going towards Baho Chiquito, and they took boat from Baho Chiquito to next camp, that Sena Front, Panamanian Border Patrol are in charge of. And when they get to the camp, and they have to pay a certain fee to get on boat and bus, they have to pay $60 for canoe trip and bus to the border of Costa Rica. So they're on the way, and we just found 16 boats full of migrants with little babies. And we are taking photos and videos. And we said, "Where are you from?" And not so many people can speak English. Most of them can speak like Spanish. And Michael Young, he said, "Are you from Cuba?" And we said, "Are you Cuba? Are you from Cuba?" And they said, "Yes, Cuba, Cuba." So many people are from Cuba, or many people are from Haiti. And we thought that, oh, we are about to go to Baho Chiquito to see those migrants. But since we found 16 boats, we may not be able to see migrants. We are kind of, oh, our mission just finished. And so we are kind of worried about it, not being able to see those migrants. But anyway, we proceeded our trip, and we got to the village. And at the entrance, it's like a river and just trees are cut so we can go in and we can enter the village. And at the entrance, there are a couple migrants taking bath in the river. It's not clear river. It's very dirt color river. Mm-hmm. And there are women wearing clothes. Some of them were not wearing clothes, even women. And but I took a film of a young woman. She was wearing clothes and she was washing her body. And the other women was washing her clothes in the same river. And many little kids were swimming in the river. And the river was, we found out that later, the villager told us that they will find dead bodies in the river, actually. Because not so many, many people lose their lives in their trip, during their trip. So that was our first impression. That's the first sight that we saw. And we got out of the boat and went inside. And we met a couple villagers, Embera people, not the migrants. And they explained to us what is happening to their village. And they are very eager to explain to us. They are very, they wanted to be heard. So we took videos and we heard that they are just overwhelmed and confused. And it's just a village. They don't have no clean water. They don't have electricity. They have no nothing. And they say that we are the ones who need help, but we are in a position that we have to help migrants. And Red Cross or UNICEF or Doctors Without Borders come to the village to help migrants. But actually, we also need help. That's what they claimed. And we started to take a walk in the village. And there was a basketball court. And it smelled horrible, like huge. Human waste was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought it's dog's waste, but it was not. It was human. Jeez. And there are many migrants limping and they have to take care of themselves without any medical supply. So we found a man who wrapped his both of feet with a plastic bag because his legs were teared, mm-hmm. Destroyed. But I think he didn't have anything to cover, so he used plastic bag. And many of them didn't have shoes, and many little kids, naked and wandering around, or many migrants laying down and putting feet up. And I looked his face and he was just exhausted. And we went to a little shop. They sell water or some kind of foods to migrants. Mm-hmm. And they had a sign saying Western Union. But the sign was not the Western Union that we saw in the United States, like a yellow sign. Hmm. It's just a handwriting sign on a board. And if you do not look closely, you don't notice it. But it says Western Union. And what happens there is that migrants, almost all the migrants get robbed. There are many gangs. And they will take all the money, not only money, but also food or accessories or whatever they can take from them. And so migrants do not have money, but they have to pay for canoe and bus. So what they do is that they go to Western Union, and then they will have their family in their original country, or for example, Haitians, their family live in Chile, for example, and they stay there like 1 year, 2 year, they have decent life, but mm-hmm. they decided.
So they'll send them the money, right?
Yeah, they will send, they have family in other country, other than their original country, have them send money, and so that they can pay for the trip. And at the Western Union, they take 20%. It's very high rate. And because of the Western Union works, they have to communicate with their family. Like they need to tell that what's the code. So they go to a place called Cell Phone Hill. In a village, remote village, you cannot have any cell phone service, internet connection. But if you go on a hill, there is a just tiny spot that you can get a signal. So they mm-hmm. take 10 minutes walk, go up to the hill, and then they will have a cell phone coverage. So they communicate with their family, and that's how they communicate with their family and have their family send money. So those are the kind of thing that we saw. And so that's what we saw basically. Is there any question or should I continue?
No, I mean, I'm just trying to soak it all in because it's so insane. I mean, the saying here is kind of follow the money, and there's people making money on these people.
Yeah.
Every step of the way, from the Western Union to, I'm guessing this is organized crime or cartels or just scumbags that are robbing these mm-hmm. people and taking advantage of them, and people are being raped and people are being assaulted. And I mean, that's saying nothing to the animals and the predators. And like you mentioned, the guy with bags on his feet, I can't even imagine what these folks must look like if they do get to the other side of the gap after going through the jungle and walking, sounds like almost barefoot, through some very, very bad terrain.
Yes. And like you mentioned, many women get raped. And so we met a doctor without border. We talked to one of the doctor, and he said that so many women get raped, and they need not only physical treatment but also mental treatment because they get trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And I also met another doctor. Her name is I don't know if I can say her name, but there's other doctor, and she actually showed me the photo of the women who got raped, and she was so shocked. And when I saw her picture, I did not know what to say. She told me that the lady was not only raped, but also she was beaten up.
Mm-hmm.
And her shoulder was all red, and her butt was kind of like, her skin was teared down, was white.
Mm.
And it's just so horrible. And those kind of things happens all the time in Darien Gap. And those women do not know what's ahead. And so I actually we went to the Colombian side of Darien Gap, like their entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually talked to many migrants, and I asked them, do you know what's ahead? And they do not know. They do not expect what's ahead. So they were like slippers. They dressed like they're just going to picnic or one day short trip. And so I felt so sorry for them because I knew what's going to happen to them. And we told them that most women will get raped. But they say that, no, it's not going to happen. We are just going to jungle. And so they are kind of trapped. And I was very, I had a question.
Sure.
How do migrants know the way to go through the jungle and get to the village and take bus and take a canoe trip? So there are people who make business. They tell migrants that if they pay them certain money, they will guide you through the jungle. So that's why migrants know that they can make it to the United States. But what happens is that those guides will walk with migrants one day, for example, and suddenly they disappear. And migrants are left alone in the jungle, but they have to just proceed.
Yeah, they can't turn back then.
They cannot. So they will do whatever they can, but another trap wait for them. Those gangs, cartels will come, and they have guns, and they have knives, and they will fit them and say, leave all the bags. And if they find like a pretty woman they prefer, like you, come with us. They actually tell them that they're gonna rape them. And I actually talked to a girl, 16-year-old girl. She is originally from Haiti, and her name is Madesi. And she is traveling, actually right now too, with her younger brother and her mom and her uncle. And we met her at the Colombian side of Darien Gap, and we exchanged our contact information, so we are texting each other. Actually, this morning she sent me message too. And when we found out that she made it through the jungle, I was very afraid, but we asked, were you okay? Like, you're a pretty girl. Are you okay? Anything happened to you? And she said that, she was told one of the, gangs. Is that right? Right word? Gangs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Spot on.
Okay. And actually they told her that they're gonna rape her. And she said, I'm a virgin. Please do not do this. She begged them. And her mom said, I have a gold necklace. So I will give you my gold necklace. So please do not insult my girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, okay. So they let her go. That I was very relieved to hear this, but so many stories, and they are lucky just to have their lives. Many people lose their lives, and they say that they see many dead bodies, and this is the reality that mainstream media do not tell us. And also, what we need to know is that it's a huge industry. At a certain point, there are places that they have to pay. And for example, there is a town called, a village called Nekokri. Nekokri is the place where Darien starts.
Mm-hmm.
So we took a boat to Nekokri, the same boat that migrants take. And we are kind of hoping to interview those migrants just about to enter Darien Gap. So we are looking for migrants. But the cartels in the village noticed about us. Like journalists, they are trying to get footage, take video. They are trying to investigate what is going on. So they didn't want us to do what we wanted to do. So they kind of told all the taxi drivers that do not take those journalists to entrance of the jungle.
Yeah.
So we were trying to get the taxi, and we asked that we are looking for the entrance where migrants get into the Darien Gap. So please take us to the jungle. We asked many taxi driver, but they said that no, you cannot take taxi. Usually they will offer you, please use my service. I'm a taxi driver. Where do you want to go? That's their job. But they are strangely refused our offer. So we noticed that something is going on. There, somebody is trying to stop us reporting on this issue. And we decided to wait at the port so that we can see those migrants arrive to the port, and then we were gonna follow them. But people try to stop us. And actually, we are three, me and Michael Yeon and Chuck Holton.
Mm-hmm.
So Chuck, we decided that we divide into two teams, and Michael Yeon and I was to stay at the port and keep watching what's happening at the port. And we saw many migrants arriving at the port, and we took the footage. And Chuck decided to follow the migrants. And as he was walking with the migrants, they said that, no, you cannot follow us. And they only took migrants into taxi. It's not a taxi that we imagine in the United States. It's like a mini bike.
Yeah, I know.
Like a tuk-tuk.
Yeah, like a little cart bike.
Yes. So there is actually plan. As soon as the migrants get to the port, taxi drivers show up. They immediately sent to the Darien entrance. So their migrants are not allowed to stay in the town area where many tourists visit. And anyway, Chuck decided to find somebody who will take him to where they went, migrants went. So he made it to the entrance, and he was taking videos, and then the cartel found Chuck taking videos. So they started to surround him, and they said, oh, do not take photos. And they tried to almost attack him. Jeez. So those people are making money, and also they are doing whatever they do not want us to take their faces. And we found out that this village has two faces. One face, very beautiful beach and tourism village. But reality is that in the jungle, they grow a lot of cocaine. So they use those migrants as a mean to transport cocaine. But what they do is that they do not ask migrants to carry cocaine, as far as what we know. They use kids in a village. They will assign those kids with a backpack full of cocaine, and then those little kids will disguise as migrants, and they go into jungle with migrants. And then when gang show up to rob them, they say, everybody drop, leave the bag. That's how they receive the package. Because if those gangs say, hey, little boy, give me your bag, it's kind of obvious that they want certain bags.
Yeah.
So people would have an idea that, oh, they are trying to exchange something, that they're trying to receive something. So they ask all the migrants to leave the baggage so that they think that they can fake this. And that's why in a rural area, many little kids had a cell phone in their hands. I live in Japan, and many little kids have phones. Mm-hmm. And in Japan, it's very rich country compared to other third world country or rural area. So it's not so, it's common for little kids to have phones. But it was very strange to me that you don't have any convenience store or any amusement place in such a area, but those kids had phones. How do they earn this money? That was my question. But yeah. When I found out about this, oh, I see, they have a job. That's why they can pay for the phones. So many industries are created. It's just one of many stories.
Yeah, I think you just nailed it. Industry, I believe, is the right word. It's definitely an industry of human trafficking, of drug trafficking, of slavery, basically. And we got prostitution, or it's not prostitution, I guess it's rape, sexual assault. I mean, the whole nine yards. And it definitely seems to be an industry. And the unique perspective you have is because you've seen it on both sides of the gap. I mean, you've seen the Colombian side, the Panama side, and the American border side. So what are you seeing on the border? I mean, in America, on the border I'm talking about here, because to me, this whole thing is just kind of predicated on the fact that our border is so porous, it's wide open. So people wouldn't be coming here if there weren't a way to get in. So what are you seeing on the American border side where you've got ranchers and the, I guess, not finished wall in America now and everything on that side of the fence as well?
Oh, yes. Right after inauguration, we went to southern border. We went to a town called El Paso. And El Paso is very famous for, I think many people visit there to report on this issue. But I think we are one of the first one who did this, who covers that town. Mm-hmm. And we were actually there on the day that they finished construction. So we saw those people at the construction site. Mm-hmm. They are kind of cleaning up and left along open border. And because I live in Japan, we don't have this kind of wall. We have natural border. Mm-hmm. We have ocean. So I didn't have any idea how it looked like. So it was very kind of shocking to me that I have just an idea, like when I hear about border, the image like the rainbow or North Korea and South Korea border,
yeah,
with high intention, but none of them was there. It's very peaceful border, I would say. It's not so high tension area.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if I wanted to go to Mexican side, I could go because it was just a open border.
Yeah.
But I didn't, but I made a photo, a very unique photo. Trump wall was this side and then it stopped and it opened. So Trump border and Biden border. That's what mm-hmm. we named. And at night, we visited the area where private organization built the wall. So we actually witnessed some of the border patrol trying to look for the migrants. It was very dark, and the border patrol had a light, and they have night vision also. They are looking for migrants. There was a hill. There was no wall because the wall ended. And the wall actually worked. That's what the private landowner explained to us. But they need to keep building the wall because it's not finished. So those migrants still try to cross from the area where the wall is not finished. So the border patrol were looking for the migrants, and I asked one of the border patrol question, and I said, if you catch illegal migrants, what do you do? Do you shoot? That's my question. Yeah. Because crossing border is a huge issue. So I had like, if you try to cross, I thought maybe they try to shoot them.
Yeah.
And he said he was just laughing and said, no, we don't, we just catch and we release. That's all. And he used the expression that it's adult version of hide and seek.
That's true.
I was very shocked. And so, and the situation got getting worse, even worse now. So I feel very sorry for the landowners who still want the border, because those illegal migrants try constantly coming to their lands, but they have no means to defend themselves. And one of the men we interviewed, he's the landowner, he said that he had a protest against him because he just wanted to protect himself, his property, his land. Yeah. But if he cooperates with a private organization to build the wall, he gets attacked. I could not understand. I was very shocked to hear this is happening.
And I think the cartels are such a major factor, especially on the U.S.-Mexico border as well. I mean, that's the reports I keep hearing, is the violence on the Mexico side with the cartels. It's another intimidation factor for the Americans on the American side that are trying to just keep their border and have their ranch and have their property and not be overwhelmed by the migrants coming at that border too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And since I did this research, I was very upset with mainstream media even more, because what we hear from the mainstream media is that, oh, we need to protect those migrants or those victims. Mm-hmm. They are in a position that needs care, or they need human rights. But the reality is that they had decent, acceptable life in other country that they spent before going on journey. Like I explained to you earlier, the 16-year-old girl,
yeah,
Madesi, she is from Haiti, but she went to Chile and she lived there 2 years. And she was with her mom and her brother, and she was just living perfectly fine. But because the new president was inaugurated, they decided to make their journey. So it's not like they are refugee who needs protection. They are not actually eligible for what they claim. So most of the migrants that we interviewed, they are not qualified as refugee or people who can claim asylum. So they are just seeking for better life. They want higher income. Mm-hmm. They want more. They want to earn money That's why they decided to go on this dangerous journey. But they have to make their journey successfully, so they learn how to explain their situation when they get to the border. So we hear that, oh, there are so many civil war, economic corruption, or the government executes its citizens so that they are escaping from those countries. Of course, there are that kind of people, but not all of them. They are using this kind of real problem to make their life, to earn their higher economic status. So we need to differentiate those who really need protection and those who are just trying to seek better life, which cause more American people's payment for tax. And those policy in the United States actually hurt them on the way to the United States. And I heard that those little kids, they have no choice. Their parents make their decision and take them to United States. And many little kids get trauma. And we talked to the Panamanian authority and the division, head of the division in charge of children's rights.
Yeah.
And they explained to us that sometimes kids make their way to the Bajo Chiquito before their parents, because parents get tired and they cannot carry their kids. So they ask other people to carry their kids, and they tell them that I will be late, but I'm going to make it. So please take my kids first. And so they get separated. And those kids will send to camp for children protection facility. Mm-hmm. And later when parents made it to the Panama City, they say that I am looking for my kids. Where are they? And they tell you that, oh, we have your kids at the facility. So they will, they can get together again. But what happens is that those kids say that I do not want to go to my parents because they made me suffer this horrible
trauma.
Jungle. Trauma, yes. So those little kids actually say that I do not want to go with my parents. I do not want to suffer anymore. So for those little kids, it's a huge deal and make them, it's not good decision for little kids. But we do not hear those stories because it's the, if America knows those truth, then people need start to think, wait, is that really good thing to think that we need to help migrants? And, you know, and then people realize what people need to think. So, so many untold truth we discovered during our research.
Wow, that's a whole other piece of the puzzle there, just the trauma with the children. And here in America, I mean, we see so many of these children coming from the southern border are being trafficked and ending up who knows where. I mean, since there's no documentation, there's no real true number count. I mean, these children just disappear and fall into, you know, some really unspeakable stuff with people with pedophilia and prostitution and slavery and trafficking and who knows what goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So those people who try to destroy United States I think they're trying to use same tactics against Japan. That's why I'm so into this issue. And they are trying to use Americans to hurt United States and also those migrants. So actually, everybody will be victimized.
Yeah.
But still, people think that, oh, we are doing great thing. We are helping migrants. We are making better life. But reality is not.
Well, I'm so happy just at the work you're doing. And one thing that I just wanted to touch on in the end here is that information warfare. And I know you're in Tokyo right now, going back to Okinawa. So what's it like where you are? What's the perception there that the people have of this crisis or just of what's going on in the United States in general? Because you've traveled so many different places. I mean, you've seen probably more than myself by far as to just what that perception is. What are the people on the ground really thinking?
Okay. Think about United States.
Well, the United States and just the border crisis that's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the mainstream media and the public perception is quite different than what you're seeing. So I just didn't know what the people, the average person are thinking.
Okay. First of all, our information is under control. So if you do not go by yourself to seek for the truth, real information, unless you do this, then you will not get the truth, what is going on. And actually, I got information who lives in Tokyo said that she just saw a UN organization doing fundraising to help migrants. And in Japan.
In Tokyo.
In Tokyo, yes. They show those photos of migrants and saying that, let's help those refugees. And your donation will make people's life better. Mm-hmm. So actually, I saw this structure. Also, Japanese people who do not have real information will donate to actually make things worse. What I mean is that those international organizations will make migrants' journey easier, kind of easier on the way. For example, helping aid or supplies, but it just accelerates people to go through or make them decide, oh, we can get help, so we can make it through, so that's an impulse mm-hmm. for those migrants to go, and that will end up those migrants in maybe lose their lives or get hurt, family separation. So it's not just about the problem in the United States, but also actually Japanese people in this sense are part of it. And I think it's like the same. Japanese people do not know what is happening. So we just hear those stories. Oh, we need to help those people in need. That's basically all that people know.
Yeah. It sounds like the same sort of tricks that they're pulling on the migrants. They're just sort of dangling this great opportunity in front of them, and they're not telling them that they're going to have to go through the jungle and get raped and get robbed and get assaulted and may not even make it out the other side. So,
yes. So I don't know how to say in English, but there is a famous saying in the road to heaven is paved with good intentions.
Good intentions. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Yes. That's what is happening. And we are trying to do good intention, but we are leaving those migrants to dying out. That's what we have to realize. So we are not trying to help them, but we are trying to kind of make them go to human misery, and which ends invading, destroying United States, our good ally.
Yeah.
That's not good, and that should not happen.
And sadly, the same things that they're doing here, they're going to pull in Japan and every other more westernized society to collapse the country. And I think that's the game plan.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, Masako, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I want to thank you so much again. Tell people the best way that they can follow your information.
Okay, thank you very much. I have my own YouTube channel, Masako Ganaha channel, and I do many live streams, but most of them are in Japanese. But when I go overseas, I interview people in English so you can understand. And I also, recently I started to use Locals. It's a kind of a blog. I try to write in English. I'm still studying English, but
you're doing great.
So if you could go to my local or my YouTube channel, then you can see what I do.
Absolutely, folks. And don't worry, if you missed any of those, I will have all of her information in the guest media section, as well as the information below with the video and the audio. As I always say, you can't do everything, but you can do something. So please try to get out there and do your part and make a difference. Until next time, I'll be seeing you sooner than later in the Anomic Age.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go to the next one.